Hi, I'm Ruthie, and I have a recorder. Tune in Wednesdays from 4 to 5 to Out There. We'll meet people and plants around the streets and paths of Northampton, and we'll think about ways we can share the world. Here on Valley Free Radio, or archived online at weatherbeer.com/out there. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if they laugh at us. Let them take the bus
and leave the circle for us. They can have a Cadillac and T-1-2. And yes, it is Wednesday. What is today? July 5th. I should know that because yesterday was 4th of July, and I did most of my recording for today's show. Yesterday, I went to the citizenship naturalization ceremony in downtown Northampton and recorded from there. So I have an interview with Diana Sierra, who became a citizen yesterday, along with about 48 other people from 32 different countries. A couple other little clips from other people who have become citizens over the years. Morty Kamel, Yvonne, I don't know her last name, but I see her on the path in Northampton a lot. And Chris, I don't know her last name either, but she says it during the interview. Today I also have an interview with Yumi Winley, talking about a little bit about the Immokalee workers. She just came back from a trip to Florida where she's working on a project with them. She also talks about her book, Pitch Black. She's an illustrator and author and lives in Florence. And if there's time, I might play a little talk that Alex Jarrett, my housemate and coworker, that he gave at our Monday night potluck on Monday. And some music. Yeah, I want to play some music by Buffy St. Marie. Let's see. And do I have a short essay for today? Well, I do. Okay. what is my essay today? Okay, so today I did a bunch of pedal people work, and I went out to East Hampton and did the compost collection out there. Anyway, I was biking around like from 7:30 in the morning until like 3 o'clock this afternoon, 2 or 3, and it was a great day for biking. And one thing that crossed my mind was all the wonderful sources of food in my life. Let's see. So when I left the house, before I left the house, I had a couple bowls of pasta that a friend gave us, sauce with tomatoes from the Aldi's dumpster. What did I have? Some eggs from the ducks and chickens in the yard. Oh, and then I left the house. Then I had some Juneberries from Smith College campus, a tree by Seeley Hall. And then I had some granola and chocolate from Wengang's house in exchange for feeding his cat. And then I had, I turned onto the street off of Bridge Street. What was it? Out by the river. Where I'm blanking on it. Anyway, and then there was this cherry tree dangling over the road, so I had some cherries there. And then I got water from the bubbler at Pulaski Park, the renovated park. Now it has a bubbler in it as of last year, a water fountain. And then there was, in East Hampton, stepped into the bushes and saw some raspberries on the way to East Hampton. And then Morty Kamel gave me some more water to refill my water bottle. Then there was like mulberries in East Hampton. And then that was all before noon. I kind of lost track. It was a good day for eating out there. So eat your berries. All right, let's play something from somebody else so someone else can talk for a while. I think I'll start with I hadn't planned this out very well. Do I want to start with Diana or do I want to start with Morty? Here, I'll start with Diana. This is Diana Sierra. So, Diana, how was the ceremony for you? What kind of things came up for you?
Well, as we were talking before, I had all sorts of mixed feelings about it. For me personally, getting citizenship has been a process that I began in 1994. And so it's a relief to have a piece of document that will make my existence in this country easier, my ease of travel and ease of political organizing, that I can take more risks. but I'm also, there's a lot of heartbreaking feelings as well of what it means that there are still like 11 million undocumented people, and that the institution that gave me, you know, that authorized me to be a citizen is still an institution that is denying that right to other people. And what it means for me personally to be a citizen of U.S. empire, knowing what the United States has been doing to immigrants and has been doing for decades in Latin America, really of supporting horrible state violence and forcing people to migrate here. So all these feelings that I should somehow be grateful, that I'm not in any way grateful. I am grateful to my mom, who worked her ass off for me to be able to get a green card and then to begin this process. But in the ceremony, like these, that I should somehow be grateful to Immigration Customs Enforcement or Naturalization Services. I'm not grateful the way that I don't think a slave would be grateful to the person giving them their freedom. It's like they fought for that. I was thinking a lot about Frederick Douglass as the ceremony was happening and what it means, you know, what does the 4th of July mean to a slave? And I'm not trying to equate the experiences of undocumented people with enslaved Africans or enslaved African Americans, but I was thinking about that, of that tradition of, you know, what does it mean for a formerly undocumented person to get the citizenship? I don't know. I am still processing, but it's a lot of mixed feelings. So I think the only, you know, because I don't think guilt or shame are productive feelings, and I'm sure I'm experiencing some of that right now. My commitment is to undocumented people and oppressed people, and now that I have this piece of paper that will make my life easier, I take pledge to those people, to the oppressed, that I can use this document in being able to continue to organize and to get more people free. So, yeah, that's how I'm kind of feeling about it right now.
There were some phrases in the vow or the commitment that you take that just kind of made me squirm. Like you promised to take up arms when legally required to defend this country. What does that mean? How does that for you?
Well, like, to defend whom and what? Am I going to defend the interests of the rich so that they can make more money off of the back of the poor that they sent to die in wars? So my oath is to... I've considered myself an American a long time, and I don't mean the U.S. I mean the Americas, because that's the original term. So I personally have a pet peeve of when people just, you know, confine America to the United States. It's like, no, I am America too. So my commitment is to the Americas, is to a free America. But, you know, this it's all a ritual. But, yeah, obviously a lot of terms and phrases, like, sit uncomfortably, especially if you know the history of how this country was founded on slavery and genocide. And that being a citizen doesn't give you any type of immunity from racism. We've already know from the experiences of Native Americans and Black people in this country that being a citizen doesn't afford you equal rights or respect or guarantee your life, that you won't be killed by state institutions.
Thinking about the 4th of July and something that I wanted to share, I wanted to get out there, is just this idea of like the 4th of July. Like, so Juneteenth was a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, thinking about, it's like a country that celebrates independence when we got these slaves or these colonies and all these people locked up. Just trying to see it from different perspectives.
Definitely, and that I think it's important for us to claim an alternative history of the United States, to not identify with the slave owners and the landowners and the imperialists and the war profiteers, but to identify ourselves with workers and the enslaved and the resistors. And I think that is what is inspiring, and where I do feel pride is in the radical history of social movements of ordinary people demanding their rights. And if we have any basic rights in this country, is due to the history of those movements who fought for you know, the 8-hour workday, or fought for African Americans and for women and for all women of color to have the right to vote. And even then, when they were fighting for those reforms, the end goal was not just to vote. The end goal was to dismantle oppressive institutions. They just saw that as one step. But their voting, their vision for justice was not confined to the ballot box. And I think that's really important, is that we see politics. I have been, they just said to me in the ceremony, like, you'll be able to vote now and you'll be able to engage in politics. Well, I've been engaged in politics even when I was undocumented, and I've never voted before. And I actually think it's much more important what you do aside from the every 4 years that you pull a ballot or push a button, is how do you actually organize? And I think it's much more important who's out in the streets rather than what you do every 4 years or every 2 years. Obviously, those things can be strategic, but like, what's going to give us even more power is like what we do with our organizing.
Yeah. Thanks, Deanna.
I know what I was thinking about. So you started on the paperwork in 1994. It's 2017, for the record.
Why is that?
I don't know if you have anything to share about that. And like
definitely. That the immigration system is intentionally designed to keep people undocumented, and that the people who are here represent a fraction of the people who are able to go through the process. Even before you can even apply to citizenship, you have to have a green card for at least 5 years, and the process for getting a green card is absolutely narrow. It's either you marry a U.S. citizen, or you're the child of a U.S. citizen, or you have an extremely wealthy person who can sponsor you. So if the process was easy, we wouldn't have 11 million undocumented people. It's not about like going to the grocery store and getting online. It's that the process is intentionally designed to keep people undocumented, and that's because it's profitable to an elite sector of the United States who profit from a cheap and precarious labor force. So we have to be, it's much easier for people to see, for example, the category of slave, that there was an entire set of institutions that kept people enslaved, and that it was a legal category that was profitable to a small sector. And I think that's a parallel analogy for thinking about the status of undocumented, that the legal category of being undocumented is actually really fairly new in U.S. history, and we have to investigate why and who profits from that. And so I'm very happy for the people who have a set of legal paperwork now that will make their lives easier to be with their families, to travel, to work, to engage in politics. So I'm not in any way trying to shame anyone. I mean, I myself am participating in this process, and I know that, I was thinking about the person from Syria, and I can't, imagine the loopholes, and so I'm happy that if it makes someone's life easier. But for me, it doesn't end here with citizenship. And even my vision for immigrant rights doesn't end at getting a piece of paper, because I think we still have to address why immigrants and people of color are paid less, and also what are the root causes of that force people to leave their countries, whether it's Syria or Mexico or Colombia. And a lot of that has to do with U.S. foreign policy and economic policy that forces people to migrate. So until that is resolved, getting a piece of paper is just one thing that people can do to make their lives easier, but it doesn't address the collective problem.
So that was an interview with Deanna Sierra at the citizenship ceremony yesterday in downtown Northampton. Deanna is also an organizer with the Pioneer Valley Workers Center that does some really great organizing in Northampton and the area. Next is Morty, and then Yvonne, and then Ruthie, and Chris.
I'm Morty Kamel. I live in East Hampton, and I was naturalized as a citizen in 1989.
What was that ceremony like for you?
I felt good about it, but then I was coming in from Canada, so for me it was more a question of wanting to vote and being politically involved rather than escaping from anything. I was escaping from a pretty good place.
There's a lot of people from the United States who want to flee to Canada because they just can't handle the politics here. So you came to be another voter here. kind of cool.
I wanted to vote for Mario Cuomo. It wasn't a big deal in 89. Nobody, the only people in the room were the 25 or 30 people who were getting sworn in and the judge. And there were no flags. There were no
photographers.
No photographers.
Maybe once there was taking pictures yesterday in Northampton.
Yeah.
So a lot of people who are born in the United States don't know what it takes to become a citizen. What are some of the challenges along the way? What were they for you?
Well, first, the most important challenge was the decision. And I really struggled with that for a few years. And then when the Canadian authorities told me that I could stay a Canadian and become an American, then that sort of made it easier for me.
So you got dual citizenship. Oh, wow. And what about the exam?
The exam was actually surprisingly hard. And I really had to study for it. And I thought I knew a lot about the United States. But I think that a lot of Americans couldn't pass that exam.
So when you became a citizen, the right to vote was an important right that you gained. Any other things, powers that you feel like gave power? Right?
No, I became a citizen because if I was going to live here, I wanted to participate in the political process. And at that time, I was living in Albany, New York, and I was really hoping that Mario Cuomo would run for president in 92. I've worked on a couple of campaigns. I worked on the Elizabeth Warren campaign, and I worked in this last election sort of more against than for somebody.
Well, thanks for coming here.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Yvonne? Wait, what's your name?
Yes, Yvonne.
Yvonne.
Yeah, you're the one with the big trunks to border around your garden.
Yeah. Yeah. So the ceremony brought up, like, a lot of memories for you.
Yes.
Were you registering people to vote with the League of Women Voters?
Well, there was somebody else who was doing it, who knew where the pens were and the material was. No.
Okay.
So I just handed out flags to the kids, handed out the balloons to the kids.
Uh-huh.
So I was kind of like a surplus. Uh-huh. Tied down the things with my tape that I brought.
Uh-huh. So when did you become a citizen?
1953, January 1953. And I was very, very sad because I wanted to vote for Eisenhower, who had liberated, you know, Europe.
Uh-huh.
And the voting was in 52, the fall of 52. Uh-huh. And I was supposed to get my papers on 52.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't. Well, you know, when it's an election year, they all get busy with so many other things that they don't think about little things like that. But I was in New York City, so they always have a lot of people.
How old were you?
Well, let me see. I was 5 years older when I came, so I must have been 22.
Okay. Where did you come from?
From Europe.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So, yeah, I came from that disaster, which is Europe, which is going to be a disaster again.
Mm.
They figured out that if they all stuck together, it was going to be so much better for everybody. You know, that EU, and now England is going away, and now they're thinking maybe others will go away, and before you know it, we'll have the same thing. Every 20 years of war between some of these states.
This is Ruthie Oland, and I live in Haydenville. And I'm actually the granddaughter of an immigrant who came from Germany in 1935 as a Jewish refugee. And it's pretty special. It's a really special moment to witness this. And I feel really lucky that I just was passing by and got to come to the ceremony and hand out flowers that somebody had brought and shared. And it's humbling. It reminds me of the rights that I have and the privilege that I have, and also just a wonderful feeling to be around so many people of the global majority when my life feels just like there's not enough people who don't look like me around. So I was a real gift on multiple levels. Thanks, Ruthie.
Thank you.
you.
Hi, my name is Christine Maribel. I am from Amherst. I myself am a naturalized citizen, and so I came here to support the people who are becoming citizens, and I think it's a great ceremony. And as people said throughout the ceremony, you know, registering to vote was probably one of the most important things they could probably do, but also just becoming a citizen and having all the rights that are given when you get that status.
Yeah, is there anything that it brought up for you, like the, I don't know if you call it the vow or the commitment? What do you call it when you...
Oh, the oath.
The oath, that's it.
It was a little weird just hearing, well, you relinquish all allegiance to other princes or sovereignties and stuff like that. And I was trying to think about that. And I'm like, well, I suppose other countries do the same thing. You can't really have... I mean, I suppose some countries you can have dual citizenships, but I'm assuming most you can. I suppose you give up your rights for that? I don't know. So that was just kind of weird to me. But I imagine that people who are born here probably have that as well, but just don't realize that because they don't have to take some kind of oath.
I know. I was like, I don't know if I would have agreed to all that. I just happened to be born here.
Right, yeah.
This is...
So you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm Ruthie Woodring. I've been playing some clips from yesterday's citizenship ceremony in downtown Northampton. You can listen to archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. I think I'm at episode 108, so I think there's 107 episodes up already, and this one will go up in a few days when I got some computer time. I'm going to play... this song, this is from West Side Story, America, and one of the things, I don't know if the words are in the song or if it's in the dialogue before the song starts, but, you know, someone does make the point that, hey, well, you know, Puerto Rico is in America.
Once an immigrant, always an immigrant.
Hey, look, instead of a shampoo, she's been brainwashed.
Stop it!
She has given up Puerto Rico and now she's queer for Uncle Sam.
Oh, no, that's not true.
Puerto Rico, my heart's devotion, let it sink back in the ocean. Always the hurricanes blowing, always the population growing, and the money owing, and the sunlight streaming, and the natives steaming. I like the island Manhattan.
I know you do.
Smoke on your pipe and put that in.
I like to be in America. Okay by me in America. Everything free in America.
For a small fee in America.
Buying on credit is so nice.
One look at us and they charge twice.
I have my own washing machine.
What will you have though to keep clean?
Skyscrapers bloom in America. Cadillacs zoom in America. Industry boom in America.
12 in a room in America.
New housing with more space.
Lots of doors slamming in our face.
I'll get a terrace apartment.
Better get rid of your accent.
Life can be bright in America.
If you can fight in America.
Life is all right in America.
If you're all white in America.
As you stay on your own side,
free to be anything you choose,
free to wait.
devils in shine shoes.
Everywhere crime in America, organized crime in America, terrible time in America.
You forget I'm in America.
I go back to San Juan.
I know a boat you can get on. Bye-bye.
Everyone there will give big cheer.
Hey! Everyone there will have moved here.
From West Side Story. Welcome back to Out There. This is WXOJ LP 103.3 FM in Northampton. I'm your host, Ruthie Wedring, playing every Wednesday from 4 to 5. Interviews and such from the streets and paths of Northampton. And I think I'm going to share my little essay of the day. It's pretty short. It's only a page of scribbles, if I can read them. So today I was doing a route, a Fettle People route, hauling trash on a route that goes up Round Hill Road. And on top of Round Hill Road, this development company has bought the land that used to be Clark School for the Deaf, and they're bulldozing and rebuilding all these condos or something. And there's this one particular tree that's at the top of the hill. It's a pretty small tree. It's like a specimen tree with red leaves, something really like delicate looking, maybe 30 feet tall, but it's this beautiful little tree, medium-sized tree. And the road that they've dozed into it, it just sort of shears off the edge of the roots, maybe a couple feet away. It's like a 4 or 5 foot drop off. Like the tree could, like, I don't know, it's like it could just, it seems like you could just like push it and it might fall over or something. And I don't know. Whenever I ride up there, I just like always wonder, like, why are the rich allowed to buy up the earth? And especially like the hilltops and the mountaintops and take them for themselves. I get put in a cynical mood when I'm going to the top of that hill, because my pickup before that, my customers get the New York Times. And so I'm usually, you know, browsing stories on the front page of the New York Times about inequality and the power and impunity of people such as Donald Trump, and reading about attacks on freedom of the press, and Mr. Trump blackmailing media networks who criticize him. So I think about the rich buying up the earth, and then I think, well, I have to take it in my own hands. Fortunately, I live amongst trees and mountains, and like earlier, I was talking about all the berries and stuff and biking back from East Hampton. I was stopped in the shade to admire the greenery and listen to all the birds singing. It was like a free lunchtime concert on the path. I left the birds some stale corn chips on the railing. It was my offering for their music. The rich can buy a Round Hill Road and pass it on to their relatives or their offspring. But when I'm on the path in the shade, I feel like I'm meekly inheriting the earth in this moment. That's my spiel. Now I'm going to play interview with Yumi. Yumi Winley. We were just sitting at the Tuesday Farmers Market yesterday and got to talking.
I'm Morty.
I want to ask you if you can introduce yourself.
Yes, my name is Yumi Winley.
And so you just got back from a trip to Florida.
I was visiting the Coalition of Immokalee Workers.
Can you just say a minute, or say what is that? What are the Immokalee Workers?
Yes, the Immokalee Workers have been fighting for 20 years to get farm workers' rights in the fields. Most of the tomatoes that people eat in grocery stores and fast food restaurants and food retail in the winter are grown in Florida and picked green. And for many years, the farm workers haven't had rights, but they organized a coalition and were able to get some rights for workers in the fields under their Fair Food Act, which they created, and it has monitoring and accountability. And now there's more shade, access to water, and the protection from sexual harassment, but also protecting the rights to complain if there's a problem without being fired or beaten up. As recently as 2008, I think there were cases of people being chained at night under slavery conditions, just in the fields, sort of hidden in plain sight in a way. So there's a slavery museum there too that they put in the back of a grower's truck. Eight people were kept in a truck at night and made to work during the day and not given their rights, and they escaped, and the coalition was able to help them, and is really advocating to, the movement is growing, and they're advocating to go to different states and beyond. Not all of the growers are under the Fair Food Act, but some of the larger fast food restaurants are, and that was one of their big successes. It's called a penny per pound, where the fast food and retail and some supermarkets pay a penny more to the grower per pound, and it goes directly to the worker because it's for the Fair Food, to support the Fair Food program. They're signed on to support it, and that's how they leveraged rights. And so we were just down there, and one of the people said, at first we were organizing ourselves and thinking, you know, it's us, we're, you know, we need to figure out how to solve the problem. But when we realized that both the consumers have the power and the people in the middle would benefit if our rights were protected, and we're able to convince them of that, the movement moved forward. It was suddenly a big success.
Wow. So what were you doing down there last week?
I don't know if it's too soon to say. I was invited down to for the possibility, if they're interested, of working on a children's book with them. That's what I do. I write and illustrate children's books about social justice issues. And there's so many stories out there. And if they want to, in a coalition style, we have the possibility of creating a children's book about the Fair Food Act and the Coalition for Immokalee Workers and rights for farm workers. And
very cool. Well, we have one of your, I don't know how many books do you have?
My first one was C'est la vie, a Haitian story of hope. It means that is life. And it was about children in Haiti who were living on the street and organized to help each other and to help others, and started a children's radio station, Radio Timoun. The second one is Pitch Black, a man who lived in the subway tunnels, an artist who lived in the subway tunnels of New York since he was a teenager for 20 years, and I collaborated to write and illustrate his story. Mali Under the Night Sky is a Laos story about a little girl who became an artist, who remembers walking from her country to Thailand during the U.S.-Vietnam War. Crane Boy is an environmental story of a little boy who organizes to protect the birds. And I just illustrated that one. I didn't write it. And Peace, Bugs, and Understanding I illustrated, which is a story about Metta. Seeing the good in others and wishing the best even for those that we're in conflict with. So I think that's all.
So the book Pitch Black, we used to have it at my house, but it's made its way. I took it to the Surge table, and so on Saturdays, when Surge is tabling at the Saturday Farmers Market in downtown Northampton, that book is usually on the table. It's a really great book. If you want to check it out, you can stop by the Surge table during like a morning farmers market Saturday hours. But if people want to look at other books of yours, how can they see them, find them, where can they get them?
They are in the library, and my name Yumi is spelled Y-O-U-M-E. My parents made it up from the words you and me, and that's the name I used to write with, and it's my real name, and it's kind of what I live by. Everybody has a story, and it's nice to hear it and to tell your own story. So you can ask a bookstore, independent bookstore, or a librarian for any book by Yumi. And there's something else I was going to say. I think it was about organizing and farm workers' rights. And
it'll come. Well, it'll come. I'm not done.
Good.
I'm not done. there's more I want to talk to you about. Let's just talk about Pitch Black for a minute. Sure. So Anthony Horton, he's the co-author of that one, and he is now deceased, correct? So how did you meet him? How did you make that relationship with him?
The story is the story of our meeting and our friendship, and we were standing, we were both in the subway, we were both living in New York, and I was staring at notes on the wall where several people had written to each other on a billboard kind of situation, and he said, it was for a movie, an advertisement, he said, "You like movies?" I said, "Well, I like how people change things to make the story their own," and he said, "Oh, you're an artist," and I said, "Aren't we all?" And yes, indeed, he was. And we just started talking on the train. He asked to see if I had any other art, and I had pictures in my bag, and then I was able to see his artwork, which was his home, and his studio was several layers below. It is illegal to trespass in the subways, so I don't recommend it, but in this case, I was invited. So I was able to, and so we worked on the book, both at his house and at my house above ground. He had a great story to tell, and he had a great sense of humor and ability to tell stories. So
when you first started getting to know each other, I feel like sometimes when people become friends, sometimes there's like this sort of question of like, what kind of friendship is this, and what are you looking at? Build trust, or what was the relationship like?
That's a great question. That's really true. I think people fall in love with each other a lot.
Yeah, people fall in love with each other and.
Yes, and when you're creating something together, you might be creating a new relationship where you're then going to live together for the rest of your life, or you might be creating, when you're creating an artwork together, you're making it with your heart, which isn't separated from our bodies, but we weren't romantically involved. I think there were some times, because he was so isolated from society in a way, he spent a lot of time by himself in the tunnels, and kind of when you come up from being underground for a long time, everything seems too bright. And I think he might have felt a little bit that way about just talking. I know I did. When I came back up, I thought, oh, everybody's looking at me like it's crazy or something. It's a little too intense. So he navigated those transitions, but we both were just kind of honest with each other, and he was looking for a partner in life, and he knew it wasn't me, and I was looking for a partner in my life, but we knew it wasn't each other. I guess that's the easiest way to say it. I think we were more parallel than, what's the other word?
Opposite the track, kind of.
Yeah, we weren't sort of coming together. We were working side by side.
It's a
really interesting question, though.
Do you remember the first time you went in the tunnels?
I do. I have a hard time if I'm, like, I remember as a kid using my sister's ID to get into a movie.
Naughty.
I know. It wasn't an R-rated movie. It was a movie theater where she worked, so I had to sort of use her identity to get in, and I just couldn't do it. couldn't say that I was someone else, and so I sort of start stammering, and it keeps me as honest as I can be, but I can't... So I was trespassing, and I knew that. But I did feel like, well, the people who work there go in all the time, in and out. And I remember he said, go in as if you belong. And that sort of has affected me in other parts of my life, too. So it's not that different on the other side of those signs. I love the... Woody Guthrie, that no trespassing is blank on the other side once you get past it. Lots of people were living there, but not at that time. That was not too long after the Trade Center, or maybe five, I can't remember the years.
It was
but
the early 2000s?
It was, sort of 2005 or 6, maybe. But... where there had been communities before, there were a lot less people living there, and he was really alone. Other people might come through, but I didn't ever see anybody else down there. Yeah. A lot of people ask about the mole people, or there's been some movies, Dark Days, and they might be there, but it was a lot harder to be there at that time.
Do you remember what you were thinking about the Muckley workers?
Well, I'm thinking a lot about them. A lot of their success comes from allies around the country. There's a student organization, Fair Food Alliance, so they work to support the Fair Food Act. And actually, right now, there's a rolling fast. Everybody can do it. You can go to the CIW.org, I believe it is. It might be on the Fair Food Alliance site, but students have been fasting. And for a day at a time, they pass it on to interfaith communities who are fasting. And people can fast from technology or from food, but it's to be in solidarity with the campaign for food justice. Yeah. My children have joined us.
Yeah, Song's been on my radio show before with a few quotes here there.
Song, do you want to say something about the 4th of July and what it means to you?
The 4th of July is fun.
The 4th of July is fun. She went to a bookstore to celebrate. Paul and I were at the citizenship ceremony that was very moving, and especially nice to hear the mayor and the judge say that it was one of their favorite days of the year of services that they do for the community was to welcome the new citizens.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. That was an interview with Yumi Winley, and the book she was talking about the book that she co-wrote with Andrew Horton called Pitch Black, about the tunnels in New York City and their friendship as artists. And you can find that book at some libraries or somewhere. It's a great book. And so Democracy Now! Is coming up at 5 o'clock, and this is Buffy St. Marie, Power in the Blood, from her album that just came out a couple of years ago.
Power in the blood. Power. Power in the blood. Power in the blood. Power in the blood. No time for spin doctors, medicine, corporation, government selling me some cover up, weaponizing pesticides, poison in my groceries. Nothing but another drug, a license they can buy and sell. No, I don't mind dying. I don't mind dying.
television anchor men, desperate for incident, real estate assassins, exploiting our predicament. High everything depends upon it being in their interest. So I don't mind dying. I don't mind dying. I don't mind dying. But when that call comes, I will say no, no, no to one. Oh. There is power in the blood, justice in the song. And when that call comes, I will say no, no, no to war. Power in the blood, justice in the song. And when that call comes, I will say no, no, no to war. There's military interest, there are GMOs in paradise, bioweapons high up on the call sheet. Young soldiers driving tanks, but old thieves, they drive the banks. And you never see a uniform on Wall Street. There's power in the blood. There is power in the blood. There is power in the blood. There is power in the blood. Though I don't mind dying. There's power in the blood, justice in the soul. And when that cry comes, I will say no, no, no to war. Power in the blood, justice in the soul. And when that cry comes, I will say no, no, no to war. Power in the blood, justice in the soul. And when that cry comes, I will say no, no, no to war. Power in the blood, justice in the soul. And when that cry comes, I will say no, no, no to war, 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 no, no to war.
That's Buffy St. Marie, Power in the Blood. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Yesterday's Democracy Now for the 4th of July, there was a special, I didn't hear it, but I read it late last night. Amy Goodman was interviewing some of the people involved at Standing Rock and the American Indians there, Dave Archambault, I think, is the one guy's name. I'm forgetful. But I was looking for the quote, what they say. Anyway, it's great. If you get a chance to read it, yesterday's The Democracy Now, it's really good. And I'm going to play another thing by Buffy St. Marie, My Country, Tis of Thy People, You're Dying. Seems pretty good for July 5th. And it's pretty serious and you know, lots of difficult things. But don't forget to enjoy nature. Nature wants us to enjoy here, I believe.
Now that your big eyes are finally opened, now that you're wondering how must they feel, meaning them that you've chased across America's movie screens, now that you're wondering how can it be real that the ones you've called colorful, noble and proud in your school propaganda, they starve in their splendor. You've asked for my comment, I simply will render. My country, 'tis of thy people you're dying. Superstition, you force us to send our toddlers away to your schools where they're taught to despise their traditions, forbid them their languages, then further say that American history really began when Columbus set sail out of Europe, and stress that the nation of leeches that's conquered this land are the biggest and bravest.
genocide basic to this country's birth of the preachers who lied, how the Bill of Rights failed, how a nation of patriots returned to their earth, and where will it tell of the Liberty Bell as it rang with a thud over Kins or mud, and a brave Uncle Sam in Alaska this year. My country, 'tis of thy people you're dying. Hear how the bargain was made for the West with her shivering children in 0 degrees. Blankets for your land, so the treaties attest. Oh, well, blankets for land is a bargain indeed. And the blankets were those Uncle Sam had collected from smallpox disease, dying soldiers that day. And the tribes were wiped out, and the history books censored. 100 years of your statesmen have felt it's better this way. Yet a few of the conquered have somehow survived. Their blood runs the redder, though genes have been paled. From the Grand Canyon's caverns to Craven's sad hills, the wounded, the losers, the robbed sing their tale. From Los Angeles County to upstate New York, the white nation fattens while others grow lean. Oh, the tricked and evicted, they know what I mean. My country, 'tis of thy people you're dying. The past, it just crumbled. The future just threatens our lifeblood shut up in your chemical tanks. And now here you come, bill of sale in your hand, and surprise in your eyes that we're lacking in thanks for the blessings of civilization you've brought us, the lessons you've taught us, the ruin you've wrought us. Oh, see what our trust in America's bought us. My country, 'tis of thy people you're dying. Now that the pride of the sires receives charity, now that we're harmless and safe behind laws, now that my life's to be known as your heritage, now that even the graves have been robbed, now that our own chosen way is a novelty, hands on our hearts, we salute you, your victory. Choke on your blue, white, and scarlet hypocrisy, pitying the blindness that you've never seen, that the eagles of war whose wings lent you glory, they were never no more than carrion crows. Pushed the wrens from their nest, stole their eggs, changed their story. The mockingbird sings it, it's all that she knows. Ah, what can I do? Say a powerless few with a lump in your throat and a tear in your eye. Can't you see that their poverty's profiting you? My country, 'tis of thy people you're dying.
That was Buffy St. Marie. the other day, I guess a Monday night potluck, we had some singing at our house, and one of the guests wanted to sing some patriotic songs. So we sang America the Beautiful, and I think I feel like I heard it with ears that that I hadn't heard so much before. So some of the lyrics to America the Beautiful, let me just read them. God shed his grace on thee. Of course, yes, we're chosen. Oh, beautiful for a pilgrim feet, whose stern impassioned stress, a thoroughfare of freedom, beat across the wilderness. Quite the contrast with Buffy St. Marie, well, and the Native experience. So you've been listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Democracy Now! Is coming up at 5 o'clock. We got a couple of minutes left, and I'll just remind you of the bike club this Saturday and every Saturday. Where is my bike club announcement? Here we go.
I found a bike today. It looks so good. Why did you throw it away?
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Venga para el Bike Lab de Northampton. Y se divertirá mucho, le enseñará muchas lecciones como arreglar bicicletas.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue,
11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross.